Good afternoon, it's 5:06 and 81 degrees here in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm your host, Keneally Roberts.
And I'm Daria Denisenko.
And the documents and the names on all the documents being presented do not match up.
Some Kentucky residents are reporting issues with documents needed for the Real ID process.
Grayson's new sports park is nearing completion.
Congress is working toward preventing a tariff increase on exported bourbon.
The Kentucky Department of Education released details on the impact of the supplemental school year program.
Transylvania University has started offering students the COVID-19 vaccine.
In sports, Eagle softball is battling it out with Dayton this afternoon.
Bud Luke has the stock report.
10% chance of showers tonight with a low around 59. We'll have an extended weather forecast after this news.
As Kentucky moves forward with its rollout of the Real ID program, some residents are reporting snags with the documents required for the process. Once someone has a Real ID, they can use it for things like flying domestically, voting, and visiting military bases. To acquire one, an individual must provide a proof of identity, such as a birth certificate or a passport. They must also show proof of Social Security with something like their Social Security card or current W-2 form. They will also have to provide two proofs of residency, such as a utility bill. Sarah Jackson is Kentucky's Real ID project manager. She says if someone has had a name change because they were married or otherwise, they will need to bring additional documentation.
There are certainly people that through marriage or divorce have a name change, and the documents and the names on all the documents being presented do not match up unless you have what we call a bridging document. So it may be a marriage license, it may be a divorce decree. Those need to be certified copies.
Jackson says another issue individuals have come across is bringing expired proofs of ID, which are not acceptable for the process. Anyone unsure of what documents they'll need can use the iDocument Guide on the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet's website, drive.ky.gov.
Grayson's new sports park is nearing completion with an official opening date set for later this spring. Mayor George Steele says the new 64-acre complex, which costs more than $7 million to construct, will begin welcoming residents and visitors. The park includes 5 fields for soccer and football, including 1 under lights, in addition to 4 baseball and softball fields under lights. There are also restrooms facilities, picnic shelters, and a playground. A spray park is also in the works, with city officials still weighing their options. Steele says additional amenities will continue to be added to the park in the coming years, including basketball courts and additional walking path. Steele says the park, which has been financed by bonds, which are being repaid by a 3% tax on restaurant sales, will help draw visitors and their dollars to town.
It's going to be a really, really great facility for the community to enjoy, and it's going to really boost the economy of our motels, our restaurants, and what's good for our motels and restaurants is also good for the other businesses.
The Grayson Sports Park is located off U.S. 60 near the East Carter Middle School.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron has filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration in an effort to block it from enforcing a provision of the American Rescue Plan Act, which prohibits states from using federal funding to offset state tax cuts. Cameron argues the law's restriction is an unconstitutional mandate and represents an overreach by the federal government. After signing the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief plan, which includes $200 million for state governments, Biden said the restrictions on how states can spend it are meant to help the middle class.
For too long, it's been the folks at the top. They're not bad folks. A significant number of them know they shouldn't be getting the tax breaks they had. But it put the richest Americans first.
Cameron was joined by Tennessee's Attorney General in filing the suit against Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. Yellen heads the federal agency tasked with certifying that state plans for using the federal funds comply with the law. Cameron says Kentuckians expect state tax policies to be set by the General Assembly, not by the federal government. At least 16 states have also filed similar lawsuits.
Congress is working towards preventing a tariff increase on exported bourbon. The Biden administration is being asked by Congressman Andy Barr and John Yarmuth to discuss suspending tariffs on American whiskey with the European Union. Eric Gregory is the president of the Kentucky Distillers Association. He tells WKYT the tariffs should be resolved quickly in order to prevent future trouble.
We just need to keep communicating to them that, you know, this has been going on for 2 years. That's 2 years too long, in our opinion. We were at zero tariffs before. We'd like to get back to zero tariffs as quickly as possible before more long-term damage is done.
The current tax will double by 50% in June if a deal is not made.
The Kentucky Department of Education released details this week about how the supplemental school year program impacts public education in Kentucky. The program was created in March when Governor Andy Beshear signed Senate Bill 128 into law. It allows any K-12 student enrolled during the 2020-2021 school year to request to use the 2021-2022 school year as a supplemental year to retake or supplement courses the student has already taken. Students submit a request to their local Board of Education. Education Commissioner Jason Glass tells LAX 18 the local board then decides whether to accept all the submitted requests or no requests.
We did hear some rumors around districts that wanted to only let students that were have high GPAs or had no discipline problems or that were perhaps seeking an additional year as it relates to sports or activities, to only let those kinds of students in. And that really wasn't the intent of the bill.
The guidance document outlines the impact the legislation has on assessment, accountability, funding, special populations, and other factors.
Transylvania University has started offering students the COVID-19 vaccine. They are partnering with Baptist Health to do so. The University of Kentucky has set a goal to return to normal operations in the fall of 2022. The one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine is already available to all UK students at the Gatton Student Center and in Hagen Hall. UK spokesperson Jay Blanton tells WKYT students can make an appointment and should bring their student ID with them.
We are full already today and tomorrow and throughout the rest of this week. There aren't really any kind of pre-scheduled appointments until this weekend, so we can do several an hour. You know, so we say we do 40 to 60 a day. That's a few hundred a week that we can be doing. So they're already full, so they're clearly the students are telling us they want this opportunity.
Transylvania officials say they plan to hold in-person commencement in May and in-person classes for the 2021-22 academic year.
Georgetown College is also making progress towards vaccinating the student body, with two clinics being held on campus and a third being planned for Monday. Students involved in sports and Greek life have supported the vaccine clinics and filled up appointments. Sydney Orther is a junior at Georgetown. She tells WKYT the vaccine will bring her friends back together.
We haven't really been able to hang out or see our sisters, especially like our newer members, so we're looking forward to getting the vaccination and being able to spend more time with them.
Many fraternity and sorority events have been canceled as a result of the pandemic, pushing Greek members to get their shot as soon as possible.
As COVID-19 cases are rising, many people have delayed regular checkups, including hearing testing. While coronavirus is known for its impact on the lungs, reports have linked COVID infections to hearing loss. Dr. Oliver Adunka at Ohio State University says 48 million Americans have some level of hearing loss, but there is no way of telling at an early stage since it typically affects higher pitches first.
And we don't use these pitches for communication at everyday level. So really the only way to detect that early is to get hearing tests. It's really kind of scary that this can creep up on you and 20 years later is when you notice it.
Adunka adds it takes on average 7 years after the onset of hearing loss for a person to seek treatment. Taking a look at the weather for the WMKY listening area. On Thursday, expect showers and thunderstorms after 1 p.m. with a high near 72. On Thursday night, expect showers mainly before 10 p.m. with a low around 54. On Friday, it's sunny with a high near 77. On Friday night, it's mostly clear with a low around 54. On Saturday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 p.m. with a high near 72 degrees.
On our feature segment today, members of the Morehead State University community are working to change campus culture by instituting a program that treats stakeholders as allies. WMKY's Leanne Akers has the story.
The Green Dot program was conceived in the college setting to prevent dating violence, sexual violence, and stalking. It relies on the premise that if everyone does their small part and commits to individual responsibility, the combined effect is a safe campus culture that is intolerant of violence. The college-based curriculum draws heavily on the experiences of college students and the reality of the issue in their lives. Leaders use the interactive activities to reinforce core concepts and encourage students to envision their future and a world in which they want to live, then align their bystander behavior with that vision. Megan Cox is a victim service advocate at Pathways, the organization that administers Green Dot regionally. She says the most important part of the program is that it is research tested.
It's got a really strong emphasis on inclusion and meeting people where they are in their violence prevention education. So we work really hard not to exclude anyone from any perspective for any reason. And the program acknowledges that no one is perfect and everyone has an individual set of barriers.
Cox says many people are prevented from intervening in situations because they feel unsafe, hate confrontation, or they simply don't want to be that person. Green Dot trains allies to overcome those barriers with realistic and practical options.
We're not asking everyone to like get up on a table and like do something super dramatic and be the hero every single time. We realize that intervening in situations is hard and scary, but we are asking you to find ways that feel real to you, ways that you can contribute to violence prevention.
The organization is offering bystander training and booster sessions to help change the systemic culture, which accepts or fails to stop dangerous situations called a red dot.
Red dots can be anything that is any kind of power-based personal violence. So the program really tries to focus on things like stalking, sexual assault, dating violence, and bullying.
Becky Davidson is the program director for social work at Morehead State University and has taken the Green Dot College training. She says in the past, harm reduction training was very victim-focused, which she felt was unfair. Green Dot gives allies another option.
I, as a community member, if I'm out in the Kroger parking lot and hear people yelling at each other, normally I would walk away from that thinking, well, I don't really know what's happening here, so I'm not going to get involved. But what Green Dot does is gives you these strategies like just to disrupt.
Lakin Albrink, a legal studies professor at MSU, was also trained for the Green Dot initiative. She says shifting the way the community talks about red dot issues will empower students.
When I think about SMART goals, I think about, you know, what's actually attainable, what's a realistic ask for students. And I think that this gives students options. It gives them the ability to tailor their response in a way that is manageable and doable for them. I think the question is often, what do we do when sexual assault happens on campus? But this shifts it. In addition to that, how can we prevent it from happening in the first place?
Alyssa Rookert is a victim advocacy coordinator for Pathways. She says the Green Dot organization is hoping to recruit additional faculty and staff to do the college training.
We have to figure out what implementation looks like. We need a strategic plan for how to find these early adopters and to figure out who we want to start with and how we're going to pull the most social capital that we can to trickle down into the first year student.
Green Dot hopes to implement the program campus-wide in the fall of 2021. More information is available at altruistic.org/services/Green Dot. For WMKY News, I'm Leanne Akers.
Support for MSPR comes from Morehead Primary Care at 333 Beacon Hill Road. Morehead Primary Care welcomes physician's assistants Kevin Cummins and Alicia Perry, accepting new patients with a focus to build patient and provider relationships for acute and chronic illnesses. Morehead Primary Care remains committed to the health of our community during this COVID-19 crisis. Office appointments and telehealth available at 606-780-0444. That's 606-780-0444. or visit the website at moreheadprimarycare.com.
It's 81 degrees here on the beautiful campus of Morehead State University. I'm your Mountain Edition host, Keneally Roberts, here with Daria Denisenko and Sarah Mead, and we're coming to you live from the Larry Netherton Studio here in the historic Breckenridge Hall. Leanne Akers has a look at sports coming up, but first, I just want to say thank you. We're so glad you can spend time with us on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon.
The Eagle softball team is back on the field today. For WMKY Sports, I'm Leanne Akers. The Morehead State softball team is on the field this afternoon for a doubleheader at Dayton. The Eagles are coming off their first conference win of the season Saturday at Tennessee State. The Flyers, meanwhile, are 6-2 in conference. Head coach Samantha Jones says her team has changed their focus this season.
We're really focusing on this culture and just building it up. And we're big on, like, if you don't have, and I'm a firm believer, if you don't have good culture, like, it doesn't really matter about the wins and losses because culture is what's going to take you over the top. It's what's going to take you past softball and past, obviously, your college experiences and things of that nature.
Today's games are available on ESPN+. The Eagles will return home this weekend for a three-game series with Belmont. There are a few high school softball games throughout the 16th region tonight. The Baxter Stevens Memorial opening day begins tonight at West Carter. The Comets will host Lewis County at 6 p.m. Neighboring Bath County is set to host Bracken County. That's also at 6. In high school baseball action in the region, Lawrence County is playing host to Russell as we listen. That game began at 4 p.m. In just a few minutes, Fleming County will throw the first pitch at Pendleton County. And then at 6 p.m., Lewis County heads to Notre Dame in Portsmouth, Ohio. Elliott County hosts Wolf County. And Greenup hosts South Webster, Ohio. We'll have scores from all of tonight's games tomorrow on Morning Edition. Speaking of baseball, the Morehead State Ball Club is preparing for a three-game series with Austin Peay this weekend. The 13-11 Eagles are coming off a 10-7 road win at Dayton Tuesday night. The Governors stand at 9-17 on their season. MSU head coach Mick Aoki says even with the win, his team knows what to work on in practice.
Our defense is continuing to improve. I really do think that there's a lot more there in terms of our ability to defend the ball at a little bit of a higher level in the infield. I think that we can be better, but I think we'll work in the right direction.
Game time in Clarksville, Tennessee on Friday is set for 6 p.m. A doubleheader Saturday begins at 2. The Morehead State volleyball team is headed to the Big Dance next week. The Eagles will face off with Creighton on Wednesday at 3:30 p.m., and the winner of that matchup will meet number 8 Florida the following day. Associate volleyball head coach Kirsten Becker says this year's tournament is unique.
Since there are only 48 teams in the women's tournament this year, the first 16 teams get a bye. Usually we get matched up with one of those top 16 teams. So going in, we felt great because you know you're not going to get one of the top 16 teams in the nation.
The entire NCAA tournament is being held at the CHI Health Center in Omaha, Nebraska. More information about that tournament is available at msueagles.com. The Morehead State football team is continuing to put in the work before they face off with Valparaiso Saturday. The contest will be the first of two home games to close out the spring season for the Eagles. The team is looking to keep their momentum going into the weekend after defeating Butler last week. Head coach Rob Tenier says his guys have been performing well on both sides of the ball.
And part of the reason we've been really good on offense, or especially this past week, is our defense has played really well. They're lacking a little bit in the rush defense, but, you know, 4 takeaways, 4 extra possessions in the game, and we only needed 69 plays to basically score 4 touchdowns. So pretty good day.
Saturday's game against Valparaiso is set to get underway at noon. Meanwhile, the University of Kentucky football team is keeping another in-state player home with the commitment of offensive lineman Grant Bingham of Johnson Central. WMKY's Shamari Mosley has that story.
Bingham, who is a 4-star ranked 30th offensive tackle by Rebels.com, picked the Wildcats over Notre Dame, Miami, Michigan, Stanford, and Arizona State. Bingham helped lead Johnson Central to the Class 4A state championship win in 2019. According to LEX18, the 6'6", 300-pound lineman is the second commit for the Wildcats class of 2022. The total class of 2022 is now up to four players, which also include Jeremiah Caldwell, Travion Longmire, and Andre Stewart. For WMKY, I'm Shamari Mosley.
And that's going to do it for sports. For WMKY, I'm Leanne Akers.
Bud Luke has a look at stocks right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from Coffee Tree Books and the Fuzzy Duck Coffee Shop, promoting literacy and reading in the MSPR listening area since 1978. Coffee Tree Books, where books are ordered every day and special orders can be accommodated, featuring a variety of gifts, locally made crafts, education materials, and yarn shop, a community bookstore located at 159 East Main Street in Moorhead. Coffee Tree Books and the Fuzzy Duck Coffee Shop are open Monday through Saturday, online Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Robert W. Baird. This is Bud Luke with your closing financial markets report for WMKY. The S&P 500 gained slightly to hover near its record high as minutes from the Federal Reserve's last meeting showed the central bank's commitment to accommodative policy in order to support a full economic recovery. And at the close, the Dow Industrials finished with a gain of 16.02 at 33,446.26. The S&P 500 was up 6.01 at 4,079.95. The NASDAQ Composite was down 9.54 on some weakness in certain of the larger tech companies, finishing at 13,688.84. Fed officials did indicate at their last meeting that the pace of asset purchases will stay the same for some time while the central bank pursues its economic goals. And today you had a continuation of good trading action in your reopening plays. Carnival Cruise Lines climbed 3.6%, while Royal Caribbean and Norwegian Cruise Lines each gained more than 2%, and shares of United Airlines rose about 1%. And bond yields continued to retreat from recent highs, with the 10-year Treasury yield dropping slightly to 1.65%, which is its lowest level since March 26th. Rising yields had spooked investors recently, sparking a rotation out of growth and into value-oriented areas of the market. JPMorgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon was optimistic about the U.S. economic comeback from the pandemic in his widely read annual letter, which was released today, where he predicted good growth through 2023. In the commodities markets, oil was up 0.4%, finishing at $59.60 a barrel. Gold was down 0.3% at $1,737.40 an ounce. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was CSX down 16 cents at $96.95, App Harvest down 68 cents at $18.29, Marathon Petroleum up 31 cents at $53.99, U.S. Bank Corp up 58 cents at $56.81, Humana was up 4.40 to finishing at 4.11.73, and Dollar General was up 11 cents to finish at 2.05.74. Reporting from the Ashland offices of Robert W. Baird, this is Bud Luke.
And that's it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. Today we had help from Tanner Boyd, Paul Hitchcock, Greg Jenkins, Carrie Stambo, Lakin Hupp, Sarah Mead, Jonathan Burton, Rachel Turner, WUKY's Josh James, the Robert Baird Company's Bud Luke, and our feature segment today came from WMKY's own Leanne Akers. Our theme music is composed and performed by Allison Brown. This is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY, Moorhead, Kentucky. Our show is archived daily on the web at wmky.org. For Daria Denisenko and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Keneally Roberts for WMKY News. All Things Considered is coming up next. It's 5:30.